Hello and welcome. It's episode 99 of Canberra Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today's conversation is a solo Q&A, so it's just me that will be coming in your ears for the next little while. The questions have been sent in by the listeners over on Instagram, and these include a number of different areas. I'm asked around what the common themes unite the success of some of my varied guests, what habit have I developed that I now deem as a waste of time, and three things that everyone can implement in 2022, and lots more. I think in total I answered 30 questions, so plenty to get through. I hope you all continue to enjoy these ones, and the plan is to continue to have the solo episodes every 10 to 15, particularly if they are Q&As or if there's a particular topic that I can do that I can add value on for anywhere between 30 to 60 minutes and try and bring some interesting episodes to your ears. We're at that milestone, 99 episodes, and 100 is just around the corner. Next weekend, I've got a bit of a different special coming for you. It's already been recorded. It's myself, Chris Burns, and David Hatt covering some standout quotes that we think are either really of good merit or are pretty weak. And it was recorded in a studio, so it's a really fun conversation for me to have. So I'm looking forward to y'all hearing that. But before that, I want to say a big thank you to today's podcast sponsor, and that is Crypto Glasgow. Founders Dawn and Deck have appeared twice in the podcast now, sharing the principles behind the best performing investment asset of the last 12 months, that is Bitcoin, and some of the inner workings of the cryptocurrency market. Many of you will know that I started my own crypto journey just over a year ago now, after first talking to the guys on the podcast in October 2020. The crypto space is vast, it's growing, it's all consuming, it's very exciting, but you can easily get lost in the noise, the hype, and not really understand what it's all about. Investing in crypto does differ to other assets because of the volatility of it and because of some of the principles behind it being quite new. So I am a big fan of the information that Crypto Glasgow bring to the space. They've got over 20 years of investing experience between the team, and that's across different asset classes as well as crypto, and you can rely on their specific expertise to help navigate what can be a pretty confusing market. And I personally have certainly benefited from that, being part of their Discord chat, which was previously a Telegram, but getting the information on there on what's happening in the market, their technical analysis, some of the charts, and depending how heavy you want to go, you can really dive into the predictions behind each coin and where you think you might want to start taking profit on yours as well. No matter what your own investment approach is, whether you're a newbie or an experienced investor, Crypto Glasgow, Dawn, Deck, and the team have a wide range of products and services to support you throughout your journey, from the Discord chat through to the startup guide, consultations, and much, much more. They've got you covered, and if you would like to get involved, the link will be in the show notes for ccgla.co.uk for you to learn more and get involved in this exciting asset. Before we dive into this episode, I'd love to say a big thank you to everyone that's listened. 99 episodes is a massive milestone. I'm excited to bring this one to you and to keep going, keep growing, and keep enjoying the process. If you've enjoyed this episode, please copy and paste the link to a friend that you think would enjoy it as well, or go into the back archives and pick another episode from the other 98 that you really enjoyed, that you think a friend would enjoy, as we keep trying to grow the audience and keep getting some high profile quality guests on the podcast. Let's go. Hello and welcome back to another solo podcast Q&A. So the questions have come across from Instagram. We've got just under 30 to get through, and I really enjoyed prepping for this one. For those that are watching on YouTube, I've got my notes here to guide me through this one and some of the headlines I want to touch on with each answer. Let's not mess about, and we'll start off with question one. This was actually asked twice, so I decided to answer this question first. Has anyone ever paid to come on the podcast, or vice versa? And the other variation I was asked was, do you pay people to come on the podcast, or do they do it for free? So nosy, but no one discusses it. It's quite an important question, actually. No one has ever paid to come on the podcast, and I haven't paid anyone to come on the podcast. My understanding from recording just under 100 episodes now is that guests, if they're very high profile or busy, they'll consider it and they'll understand whether it's worthwhile to spend an hour of their time with me based on the number of listen numbers that the podcast gets or the audience demographic that they would be getting to speak to. Many people that have been on the podcast have actually directly financially benefited. So there's been a fiscal benefit from them coming on. People have got clients, been approached for brand deals, been invited on other podcasts, gained dedicated followers to join their audience through the exposure they get from having a 1 hour conversation. And I mean, they've even sold books as well. If you look at Andrew Craig, How to Own the World, episode 42, one of my most played episodes, but the number of people that have read the book off the back of that episode is absolutely massive. So in my opinion, it's a fairly low investment, high potential return for a guest. I'd expect it's now actually more common for hosts to charge guests to appear rather than the other way around, because based on what you potentially get access to, you've got an attentive, aligned, relevant audience that you can sell a product or a service to if you come across well. Ultimately, I don't like if somebody's always coming on as a like selling, but you see it a lot with authors on some podcasts. They'll come on and they'll do like a tour of podcasts when their book comes out. So with that in mind, you would maybe think that it might be a paid promotion. Question two, could you have an anonymous guest on the podcast? Yes, you could. Actually, VP, who is an expert in Forex, was on episode 38 and he was completely anonymous. We were on Zoom together, his screen was blank. And I think, yeah, I mean, if he's not shown himself on camera, he's got a pretty generic American accent. Unless you knew exactly who that was, it'd be very, very hard for you to like identify who that was. I think his own voice wasn't distorted, or he wasn't using a filter for his voice. But in theory, you could host somebody on Zoom without their camera on. Their voice could be distorted at their end. And as long as it didn't change the quality of the podcast, then it would be absolutely fine. I think I'm trying to think, like Crime Watch in the UK, when that was on TV, you sometimes got like an anonymous interview and it was always like a blacked out shadowy figure with a distorted voice. You could potentially achieve that if somebody was that desperate to not be identified. Question three, they say successfully footprints. Have you noticed a pattern that links your guests in their path to success despite their very different fields of expertise and backgrounds? This was probably the most thought-provoking question for me preparing for this podcast, and I'm going to answer it because I thought that the concept of identifying key trends, key links up for somebody's success is very, very interesting, particularly when you look at the variation of guests that we've had. And given there's such a wide range of guests and also the industries that they operate in, it'd be very difficult to identify just singular themes that they all do well in order to end up where they are. But I'm going to call it three things that I've noticed. Almost all of my successful guests have a regular exercise habit. Now, there's going to be a bias towards that because I'm inviting guests sometimes from the fitness industry. I'm inviting guests that I look up to, which tends to be people who look after their bodies and their minds. And that's probably not a coincidence, but it is core to many people functioning at a high level. So I definitely think that among my guests, one of the key themes is that many of them look after their bodies from an exercise perspective, and it leads into success in other areas. The second is they also have a high level of self-awareness in what they're good at. They have identified an area in their life that they can gain success from by maximizing their time that they spend on it and improving how they do so. Alongside that, I think they understand that when there's an area they need to improve, they take action in that, either by managing their environment and their approach, outsourcing it and paying somebody else to do it, or getting a coach or a mentor to bring them up to a level where they're more competent in that particular area of weakness at this moment in time. So that would be the first two. And lastly, many of my most successful guests have actually demonstrated that they are very good listeners. And while I'm asking the question, you can see they're taking on board exactly what I'm saying. So they're not just thinking of what they want to say next, but what they perhaps should say next based on what has been asked of them, rather than just immediately blurting out a pre-thought outline. And I've noticed that in some guests who are probably the best listeners, they answer the questions far more directly and more fully than those that maybe just want to spit back at you what they've said before. And it might sound unhelpful to those of you that aren't going to be interviewed on podcasts or interview people on podcasts, but being a good listener can be applied in other areas as well. It's not just relevant to creating a good podcast interview. We're interviewing each other all the time. In work, it's a great skill to listen and absorb information before responding. And then when you do respond, you respond specifically about what has been asked about you, not just on the point that you plan to make. The bonus one that I'll give you, which is the fourth, is that a lot of them are either completely sober or they're highly selective in when they drink. again, this is probably a bias based on my own life choices and how I've set myself up, but success leaves clues, they leave footprints, and not being an habitual user of alcohol who just responds and does it whenever is definitely a big footprint that I've identified when it comes to people's success. Question 4, if you could be any superhero, who would you be and why? My favorite superhero is probably Batman. And I definitely just seem to like watching the cartoons of his when I was younger. I had the toys, and compare that to like Superman or maybe Spider-Man. I didn't mind him. I had his game on PlayStation 2 and that was good. And obviously builds a bit of a connection with him. But I couldn't explain why I just much preferred Batman. I think if I was to really identify, it would actually be the array of villains that Batman comes up against, makes it a bit more exciting. And he faces his own demons of his past, and it's a bit more of a story that I enjoyed. Whereas I think if you look at maybe Superman, for example, it tends to be like one big enemy. It's like Lex Luthor that's always there in the background. Whereas Batman, of course, he has the Joker, but he has everyone else. He has Mr. Freeze, he has Catwoman, he has Poison Ivy, he has Bane, he has so many other things that he's up against. The recent films were also good, so that's probably reinforced the fact that I really like Batman as a superhero. So if I could be anybody, I would be Bruce Wayne, but also Batman. Question 5, what does the next 5 years hold for Cole? What's the goal? The top level goal is I want to progress towards financial freedom, where I'm closer to being able to choose how I spend my time, where I spend my time, and in what sector that I work in, based purely on stimulus rather than financial requirement and need. That's not to say that I'm not really enjoying the sector I'm working in just now, because we'll come on to that. It's actually one of the questions that I was asked today. But I would want to progress to an area where I was closer to having around £1 million saved or invested in assets, because I believe that is around the magic number that most people need in order to successfully retire early. There appears to be a number of people like very focused on this £1 million number, and I think that's probably the number that I would need to work towards. Again, we've actually got an upcoming episode that will dive into that in that sense. But in the next 5 years, that's not even a remote possibility at the moment if my next 5 years are the same as my last 5 years. But things compound, investments add up. So in the next 5 years, I would hope to be closer towards financial freedom in terms of a goal, and live life even more on my terms than I do just now, which largely is very much on my terms and I enjoy it, but I'm not massively free. Other things in the next 5 years would probably be to continue to scale and invest my time in this particular project, so Cambro Conversations, because I know it will benefit both myself from a development level, but also the others that choose to tune in as well, because I feel it's great to share these conversations with brilliant individuals and we can all develop together. Question 6, sleep, .. Why 7 to 9 hours? What are the benefits? What's wrong with having 4 or 5? In short, you're reducing your energy, you're reducing your brain power and concentration, you're reducing your ability to adhere to hard tasks, and also your ability to recover from hard training as well. There are no upsides to having less sleep than 7 to 9 hours, none. Researchers at the University of California actually discovered that some people do have a unique gene that enables them to function well in 6 hours of sleep a night. So that's not 4 or 5, that's 6. This gene, however, is actually so rare, and it appears in less than 3% of the population. For the other 97% of us, 6 hours just does not come close to cutting it. And it's very unlikely that many people listening to this podcast will have that gene. And you will be walking around in a slight state of sleep deprivation unless you're addressing getting those numbers up from 4 or 5 to 6 to 7, pushing towards 7 to 9 ideally. And it's about quality of sleep as well, rather than just time spent in bed. Episode 29 in the podcast is with a sleep expert, a sleep doctor from Stanford University. So please go back and tune into that one if you're concerned about your sleep. And I actually have another sleep episode. I've got a recording booked in for early December, I think the 7th or 8th of December, and that'll probably come out in the new year. And I'm excited to dive into that one. Question 7 is another sleep-related question. If you wake during the night for a nightmare or a pee or whatever, how do you get yourself back to sleep? First things first, regarding the bathroom, this happens to me some nights, and there are ways that we can minimize the chances of you waking for the bathroom. The first of those would be to reduce your water, your liquid intake in the couple hours before bed. Couple of hours before bed is the important point here, because for me, I'll be starting to reduce my water intake to almost none after 7:30 at night, because I'm trying to start to wind down for bed from 9:30, sleeping for 10. That's the plan. Alongside that, you want to avoid stimulants like caffeine and nicotine if you're a smoker close to bed as well. Exercising regularly is actually helpful for your sleep, but strenuous exercise immediately before you try to go to sleep actually make it more likely for you to wake and need the bathroom as well. And the last thing would be to avoid foods that are disruptive to your digestion. So very spicy foods, very heavy, very rich foods. If you don't respond well to like fake sugars, like in protein bars or Sorine or in the Halo Top ice cream, then you probably should avoid those foods immediately before bed as well. Nightmare wise, I will ask this on my next podcast recording with a sleep expert, but if you're conscious, I do know that when you wake, the worst thing you can do is look at the clock or look at your phone or start to look at like other devices. Knowing what time it is, your mind automatically starts to try and think about how many hours sleep can I get back? Like how much can I rest before I have to get up again? And that causes more disturbances to your subconscious, which ultimately leads to poorer sleep, even if you do get back to sleep after a nightmare. Question 8, main reason for the podcast. If it's for the listener's benefit, would you not feel less stressed about doing it? The main reason for starting the podcast was to diversify the content that I brought to my audience alongside Instagram. I'd been a guest on podcasts and I was keen to explore how I would be as a host, and the feedback I always got when I was ever a guest was really, really positive. So it's certainly for the listener's benefit, but I wouldn't adhere to producing a minimum of one episode per week for since April 2020 if I didn't feel a sense of fulfillment from the conversations that I'm having and the process that I go through. So of course, there's a selfish element where I benefit from producing podcasts as well while supporting the listeners in their self-development journeys. Stress-wise, I don't think the podcast is massively stressful because it doesn't always feel like work. In fact, it rarely does. It's only when I've maybe had a very hectic work travel week and I'm a bit worried about my recording schedule or when I'm going to get time to record the intros or when I'm going to get time to write the show notes. And I guess with the recording schedule with work travel, the challenging part is I don't trust hotel Wi-Fi and I've never taken like my mic or my ring light with me to a hotel to do a recording. So that is the only time it gets stressful, when life is very hectic and it's hard to find time to record. Question 9, do you think you'd be successful if you hadn't found your love for training in the gym? The relative level of success that I've got would not even be close to this level if I hadn't fallen in love with training and developing my body. It all came from a position of taking control of my physical appearance and my stature and how I felt about myself. Now, everyone can shake their head and disregard the fact that how you look is not the most important thing. And it certainly isn't the most important thing, but it's pretty important about how you feel about yourself. And it's the entry level for a lot of people. When you make a physical change, it can start a self-development journey because it generates momentum. If I can control this one important facet of my life, what other areas of my life can I apply this lesson to? If you can govern this one area and have the right to do so because you look great, you train well, you eat well, you make changes to your body because you want to and you've decided to, then you can apply it in other areas of your life as well. And that's certainly what happened with me when it came to work and career, when it came to creating content, when it came to just speaking to people as well, just being more confident in myself. Question 10. Do you find a difference training with females versus males? Which do you prefer? Typically, when I train with females, one thing I would notice is a difference would be they're more used to high volume training. So more sets and more reps. So 3 15s, 4 sets of 12, stuff like that is more common for females to be used to. And actually, scientifically, they respond much better to higher volume training as well, which is interesting. Guys tend to train with more intensity, and they tend to have a better idea of what true muscular failure looks like on a set. I've trained with girls before who they've been going for a set of 12 on like chest press, and they could easily have got 20 because they just assumed that they almost limited themselves inside their own head. And that's very stereotypical, but it's from anecdotal experience which I'm being asked about here. I've not got a massive preference for who I train with, but I've trained with more guys, but still plenty of females across the fitness industry. And I enjoy both. One side note would be for Metcon style training, it can be better to train with guys who are closer to you in terms of strength and output, because it gives you somebody directly to aim for to try and keep up with in terms of what they're doing on the assault bike, what they're doing with the snatch, and how fast they're getting through the workout in order to kind of keep up and try and compete. Question 11, how are the following for you? Health, wealth, friendships, relationships, self-development. Love this question because it's a bit of a catch-up with Cole. Health, really good as far as I know. I'm feeling good. I'm moving well. I've got a flu jab coming the next couple of days. It might even be after the time this episode's been released. So we'll see how I feel after that. But keen not to get the flu. I've had that for a number of years due to my asthma. Again, some people don't know that, but I am asthmatic. It tends to spike a little bit in the winter as it gets colder and you get more cold air in your lungs. My eye issue, which you might remember over the last few weeks, particularly those that follow me on Instagram, is cleared up a lot, although I've not reintroduced any skincare products to my routine again. So hopefully when I do that, it won't spike again. So health-wise, doing very well. Wealth, work's been extremely rewarding. I've been very glad over the last 7 months to earn more fiscally. We are paid commission/bonuses each month, depending on how we do as well. And September was the peak period for student accommodation. And that was my most significant recognition of commission I've ever had in a month's period. So that was fantastic. And that felt great wealth-wise. And I've also been pleased with what I've been doing with my investments. We know I talk about crypto. I'll probably touch on it in this podcast as well. But I've upped my monthly allocation to my Vanguard, which is an S&P 500 tracker and another fund, in line with my increased salary. And the amount of money that I've had available to invest has gone up. So wealth-wise, feeling good. Friendships. I'm very happy with the people that I spend time with. I continue to meet more interesting people online, through Instagram, through the podcast, through collaborations. And it's amazing really how many great people you can make friends with through the internet. And making social media social is just such a huge point for me. Equally, I am very ruthless at times with who I spend my time with. And that's not to say that I publicly announce, oh, I'm not spending time with X, Y, or Z. It's a case of, I just say no to some things that don't serve me. So I'm not always going to say yes to every invitation. Relationships, family-wise, working at home, I would say, has actually led to my relationship with my family being every bit as good, if not better, than ever before, because I get to see mum and dad a little bit more in person because there's no time allocated towards commutes. Yes, everyone that follows me on Instagram will know that I'm traveling all across the UK at different times, but on those days when I work at home, you have a lot more time. So you can drop in after work, you can drop in after the gym. Whereas when you were like commuting every day to the office, time was a bit more harem scarem. And after the gym, you just need to get home and get stuff ready for tomorrow, cook your dinner. Whereas now there's a lot more scope to spend some time. Time isn't so stretched. And romantically, in terms of relationships wise, I'm not seeing anyone just now at all. So that would be the only update in that space. Last but not least would be self-development. I've listened to a lot of excellent content recently, and in terms of like where I've really been listening and what kind of content I've been consuming, I've thought and learned a lot about topics like struggle and critical thought, which I think are underdeveloped areas for a lot of modern society. So that's been an area of interest for me recently. Reading wise, that habit fell off badly for about 2.5 months, 3 months almost. It was really, really poor. It was the first thing that went before bed. I was still journaling, but I was like, right, I'm too tired. I'll just not journal. I'll just not read. And in the last couple of weeks, I've managed to pick it back up and my sleep is better as a result. My creativity is better as a result. And I'm maybe more articulate as well, which is always good if you're going to record yourself for an hour a week. The next book on my list as well is actually The Forgotten Highlander. So those that had listened back to episode one will remember that was a Chris Williamson recommendation. So I'm really looking forward to that. And it's a bit similar to Man's Search for Meaning, which was one of the most impactful books I've ever read. Question 12, why have you stayed clean cut and not fallen to societal norms? I wasn't 100% sure in the framing of this question before I started, but I'm going to try and go in the direction that I think it should go in. I know that I behave differently to some societal norms, things like training very hard, relentlessly being consistent with your nutrition. On the vast majority of the time, being a sober person is very, very unusual. Being active in all weathers and getting the steps in regardless of hail, rain, or shine. People think that's strange. That goes against what societal norms are. But in other ways, I've probably conformed to societal norms in terms of coming from a middle-class background in the west of Scotland. I went to university. I got a graduate job. I got a house, albeit maybe slightly earlier with the house than is normal nowadays with the challenges of the housing market. But I guess I've conformed in that sense. But at the same time, being clean cut, I think it depends who you spend your time with when you're younger as well, in terms of what clean cut looks like, because it might be that you spent time with people who were less clean cut just by nature of where you come from or what sports you were into and that kind of thing. So I am quite clean cut in that sense, and I've gone into the corporate world. When I go down south, I see a lot more people who are quite clean cut like me in my age group, and I wonder whether it's less common in Scotland to be so corporate at a young age. But that's me just thinking off the top of my head just now. I guess the last thing I would say, just to wrap that question up, because I don't feel I've maybe given that the fullest answer, I don't always like doing what everyone else is doing, particularly if I don't envy what those people are up to. If I look across at somebody else's life and think, oh God, that wouldn't be me, then of course I want to buck the norm. If what they're doing is the norm and is standard, then it's a firm no from me. Question 13, where do you see Instagram in 5 years' time? It's very hard to predict that, but if we're looking at social media companies and what they're up to, we can see that they're making a move towards virtual reality, so blurring the lines between social media and real life. Zuckerberg, Instagram is part of that group. It's part of Facebook, and Facebook is rebranding as Meta, meaning that likely the other platforms under that, WhatsApp, Instagram, will start to move that way as well. And the immersion of our lives within our phones and our devices is going to continue at a pace, and Instagram will play a part of that. Equally, nobody saw TikTok coming. Nobody saw Instagram introducing Reels as a response to TikTok. So social media will evolve very, very quickly, and only the very, very cleverest will be able to predict exactly what that looks like. But one thing that a layman can predict to myself is that we will move towards more virtual reality. And there's going to be some big questions about whether any of you will really actually want to do that, because everyone's seen Ready Player One, and any conspiracy theorists will be a bit worried about where we're heading. Question 14, what three things can we all implement in 2022? Nice that people care about what I think about this, but off the top of my head, I would say, number one, I think we should care every bit as much about our informal movement as our formal training. It's a bigger part of our life, a bigger percentage of our week and our day, and it's a bigger part of our health. And if we think about the 1 hour a day that we're in the gym, or 1 hour a day, 3 days a week, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, that's a tiny percentage versus our informal movement. So the amount that we walk, the amount that we stand up during work, the amount that we move, the amount that we are flexible when we clean the house, all these different things, that's every bit as important and should be valued as much as our formal training, because that's what adds up to a sustainable physique, a sustainable body, a flexible injury-proof body as well. Number two, I think we should take complete responsibility on a personal level for our circumstances and our situation. This is untold benefits for how we behave and how we think of ourselves. And ultimately, if we have less embracing of the victimhood and the why always me mindset, and we think more about being our own savior, that can only be a good thing in my book. Number three, and I did say I've been reading a little bit more about this topic and listening to more content on it, is embracing the struggle willingly and not always searching for pleasure. In today's society, it's all too easy for us to escape from any form of discomfort or boredom that we have. It's easy to reach for our phones. It's easy to reach for hyper-palatable food. Whenever we feel boredom or discomfort, we can escape it short-term with an immediate boost in our dopamine or an immediate boost in some other area. We can all better control our urges. And for me, embracing the struggle and a little bit of discomfort is a good thing. Riding the wave of temptation and better focusing and trying to gain traction rather than distraction is going to be a good thing in 2022. Question 15, have you ever been in a situation where you had to disassociate with a certain friend or friends? Yes, I actually spoke about this on episode 55, which is a solo podcast on changing friend groups. I think that might be one of the titles of the episode, actually. You will naturally create distance by the activities and behaviors that you choose to get involved in. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big announcement where you say to somebody, look, we can't be friends anymore. You're bringing me down. The fact that you have a recreational drug habit, the fact that you are an alcoholic and shout and swear at me, the fact that you, I don't know, whatever they've done, you cheat on your girlfriend, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. Whatever it is, that you feel you have to disassociate from. It doesn't need to be a public falling out. It'll be obvious by your actions. And you should focus on this in terms of you making positive decisions for you to make positive change in your life. And who you spend time with will ultimately change off the back of that as well. Again, I mentioned earlier about friendships in terms of how they were for me. Use online to find your network. Find a tribe. If there's somebody that you follow on Instagram that you get on really well with, you talk back and forth, meet up for a training session, meet up for a coffee, meet up for a walk, meet up for whatever you get up to. And I'll guarantee that your friend group will improve off the back of that, and it'll be easier to make your positive changes. Question 16, what crypto do you invest in? For starters, this is not financial advice. This is just an insight into what I do. I invest in three main coins, the biggest holding being in Bitcoin, as it is a hedge against inflation. The second is Ethereum, which is actually the second largest market cap coin as well. I believe Ethereum is going to go very, very high in the next few years, and I want exposure to that. It's a big part of how things are fueled in terms of gas fees and things like that. Again, if I'm using crazy terms, go back and listen to the crypto episodes. The third coin that I hold quite a lot of is Ripple, which is XRP. It is all about the use case when it comes to transferring funds globally at low cost, at high speeds. So there's a very strong use case for Ripple and XRP, and it's a bit of a lower coin. It's only, at the time of recording, because crypto moves fast, it's about 103, so $1.03, and it has potential to go much, much higher than that. So I like that. And then I have a small holding in Swissborg's own coin, pardon me, Swissborg's own coin, which is something I want to have exposure to, because like the other trading platforms like Binance and Coinbase, they have coins and they're worth $4, $5, $6, $7, $8, whatever it is. Swissborg at the moment is under a dollar, like about 75 cent at the time recording again. So there's potential for that to be a bigger coin in the future. Right, I'm going to brace myself, because question 17 is your full thoughts on Stevie G leaving. It's just over 2 weeks ago now. Rangers have now appointed Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, and we've just gone through to the knockout stages of the Europa League. So it's been a successful start under Gio. But even this far on, a good couple of weeks now, I'm still very disappointed in his choice. I am very thankful for the turnaround that he oversaw from the mess that he inherited in 2018. He managed to win the title back, the most important title of my lifetime, 55, stopping Celtic's bid for 10 in a row. But I do question his timing and the bravado in the press in the days and the weeks before it about, do I look happy? Do I look settled? That was unnecessary, particularly if he thought that if the right job came up that he would leave, he shouldn't be beating his chest at that in public. But Rangers have moved very quickly. We've made that high profile appointment in Gio Van Bronckhorst. He is a former Rangers player who was very successful at the club as well. And I'm now entirely focused on backing Gio. Gerrard's legacy will be 55, but this exit and the way he's done it to join Aston Villa mid-season, it will sour that somewhat. And I had some older Rangers fans say to me that when Souness left, just before Walter took over, a lot of how Souness is remembered has mellowed over time because of the success of his successor. As in, if he'd left and things had fallen apart, then you hold him in a lot worse regard. Whereas because of his success afterwards, it's a lot easier to not be as angry. But I'd hope Gerrard would stay till we were back playing in the Champions League. And I thought that would be good for his CV in order to get where he wants to go, which is the Liverpool job. But that was not to be. Question 18 then. Best bits of advice to get started in self-improvement. What would the non-negotiables be? For starters, using terms like non-negotiable is going to put you in a big place, because it's going to help your self-development improve far faster than most people, because most people do not have things that they always do. Rain, hail, shine, challenges or not, most people find a way to skip things. So if you have things like non-negotiables in your head, that's a fantastic term to have in your vocabulary into action. For me, they would include some form of formal exercise target and a weekly number that you adhere to in terms of what you do in that space. I would also have some sort of target when it comes to what you consume in terms of water and food. But I would also look at what you consume when it comes to content. It's not limited to eating and drinking. It's about what your ears and your eyes take in as well. You cannot self-improve to the level you want to if you just never, if you're always listening to the radio in the car, if you're always watching Netflix the night before bed, don't get me wrong, these things are part of everyday life, but making more smart choices about what goes into your eyes and your ears is going to lead to a better position as well. Alongside that, I would start with achievable metrics. Not so small and insignificant that they have no impact, but not so big that you couldn't possibly manage to do that tomorrow. It needs to be something that you can adhere to. So going from the classic example, going from never training at the gym to 5 days a week is ridiculous and you just shouldn't even try. But flipping the switch and moving in the right direction and dialing it up over time, that's much better. In terms of self-development sources and the different mediums that are available to you, you need to find ones that you respond well to personally. We spoke about this in episode one with Chris Williamson. You need to find sources that you can take in. It doesn't have to be books. It could be a podcast. It could be YouTube. It could be an in-person workshop. It could be anything at all that responds well to your learning style. And you need to then favor that and dial down on that, absorb the info, and then, of course, take action. Question 19, how's life in the not-so-new job role? By the time this comes out, it'll be just under 7 months, maybe a couple of days short of 7 months since I joined David Phillips. This time of year, there's a big, big focus on the pipeline and agreeing with clients that you're going to be their preferred supplier for their replenishment of furniture or any refurbishments they do for next summer, which is kind of peak period for student. So it's very exciting times. I've just had a busy week in the showroom hosting clients, getting them to look, touch, feel, get a confidence in our range and our service and really get to know people rather than just over Zoom. And that's been really exciting because it's been some of my biggest opportunities that I've been speaking to this week. So fantastic so far and continuing to find it fulfilling. Question 20, how to get motivated, bro? Find something you care about. Write down what your goal in that space is and the ambition that you have. And from there, you need to seek out sources that support you to remind you of this and ensure that you remain enthusiastic to chase towards this goal. Because at the start, if you're chasing motivation, you need things to inspire you and to hype you up and to make you feel like you want to do it. So a bit of an insight. I once about 2014, I was training at a gym in the local area and there was guys that were saying to each other, two guys in particular, they said, oh, that Colin Campbell, he's got good arms and abs, but that's it. He's got no legs. So I used to remind myself of what they'd said to motivate me to train my legs much harder, because up until that point I hadn't really trained them hard enough. I hadn't pushed hard enough. I had a decently heavy squat, but that's not the be-all and end-all when it comes to hypertrophy. So I used to remind myself, I used to watch videos on my phone, leg day motivation, which sounds a bit cringe now, but at the time it worked when it came to motivation. But ultimately you need to, from there, start to develop disciplines and habits, and that's what's going to be vital in your success. But find that motivation initially by writing things down, like anything that's irked you or anything that you really care about. Find sources to reinforce that, but then you need to go beyond that and gain a lot more motivation. You need to gain discipline. 21, tips for staying lean, visible abs, beach body look, while retaining health and enjoyment. It actually gets easier over time. One of the main reasons for that is because you gain more muscle and it's easier to stay lean when you've got more muscle, because it shows more when you're not as lean, and also you require a bit more food to maintain your current weight. Strict reverse diets are very helpful for that. So when you do get lean, don't balloon back up quickly after a long diet. Instead, try and add in some food slowly over time and your body will respond to that metabolically. Beyond that, habits that you have the majority of the time, so I'm talking 9 days out of 10, 99% of the days of the year, that maintain a tight control of your calorie input and your output in terms of energy are vital. So to stay lean, you need to move lots and eat well when you have the opportunity to. So around social occasions, of course, the social occasions themselves might be hard for that. So you're retaining enjoyment in that space. But you need to adhere tightly on the days that you have the opportunity to, because discipline will equal freedom and it will create a buffer for the days that you don't. So unless you have a diagnosed challenge with relationship with food and exercise, increasing your steps around the days where you know you're going to overeat a little bit more over the festive period perhaps is a healthy outlet. Spending hours in the Stairmaster is obviously the opposite of that, but just moving and being healthy and making sure that your expenditure is of a high level can help you stay leaner more often. 22, what is the most beneficial habit you've developed in your self-development journey? Number one has got to be early morning walks. it's amazing for your discipline and reinforcing the kind of person you want to be, because you're serving yourself early on, and it's a vote for you being the kind of person that does the things that they need to do first thing in the morning. It keeps your neat high. It keeps your mindset ticking over. It enables you to be more creative and focused as well. I certainly come up with my best ideas when I'm walking or when I come back. My work period, my flow after a walk is excellent. And there's a lot of data on that. One of my most desired podcast guests is a guy called Shane O'Mara. And he's a professor that has done a lot of research on this. And I'm a big, big fan of what he has worked on in that space. 23, the exact opposite. What habit did you develop that you now see as a waste of time? So back in 2015, I noticed I had some mobility challenges that I really needed to work on. And as part of my morning routine, and it's still the case, I stretch every morning before I go for my walk. I used to do a really lengthy foam rolling sequence within that, probably about 10 minutes worth, all my lower body, some of my upper, and really the return on it was very limited, and it's got limited scientific backing as well. So instead now, I actually foam roll just my shins, because that's where I get a lot of tightness from sitting, and I actually put the roller in my mid-back and I reach up over my head into kind of Y shape and just kind of move my arms around to open up my thoracic. And that's the only part of foam rolling I do now. So I've dialed that massively back because it used to be a big focus and a big time spend. And ultimately it was actually a bit of a waste of time. Question 24, if you could do anything anywhere in the world, what would it be? Time travel is allowed. I'm going to use that time travel part because I wasn't sure what the answer would be, but because you've included time travel, I'm going to answer that. And the answer is I would go back and watch my grandpa, Willie Thornton, play for Rangers. He scored almost 200 goals for the club, but the game that I picked that I would want to watch in that moment would be the 1949 Scottish Cup final. He actually scored 2 goals in a 3-0 win over East Fife, who at the time were one of the leading teams. And it was in front of a crowd of 120,000 people at Hampden. So just an incredible moment, incredible to see him securing more honours for Rangers. And that was a year that the team won a domestic double as well, which was a big deal at the time to do that. So I would love to go back to 1949 and use the time travel aspect. 25, what advice would you give 50-year-old you? Oh, wow. That's going to depend so much on what happens in the intervening 21 years. But right now, I'd like to remind my older self to focus on being healthy and looking after my longevity, to continue to live life on my terms as I go beyond 50 towards 60, 70, 80, 90, however long that goes. Because at 50, you actually have a long time left to live, ideally. It might even be the midway point in your life if you're somebody that lives a very long time. Because life expectancy for males in the UK is around 82. I think it was 81 point something in 2018. So there's plenty of time left to achieve anything that you might have not already done so. So I'd remind myself of that. And I'd remind myself to make sure that I continue enjoying what I do, whatever it is I do, and whatever it is I spend most of my time on during the week for work or business or career. And I would ask myself, are you spending time with people that you're enjoying? Are you spending time with people that are supporting you and making you feel better? Are you supporting them? And remind myself to keep taking part in activities and behaving in a way that I'm proud of and I can look back on when I'm 80, 90 in a way that I'm pleased with. Question 26, how to build confidence when being new at CrossFit? Disclaimer, I've not got a lot of experience in CrossFit. I've done a lot of different CrossFit style workouts, probably more at the beginner end based on my skill with a barbell being minimal. But I've done a lot of dumbbell stuff, I've done a lot of cardio stuff, and I've pushed myself quite hard at the factory weight shoots. But I'll share the advice that I would give when anyone goes into any new activity or pursuit. Watch the best performers in the space. Learn from those that have more experience than you. Build a sustainable plan on how you can train, practice, or learn. And make sure the plan takes into account your ability to adhere to it, while also having some significant scientific merit or benefit to what you're doing as well. Don't just do things that anecdotally the top performers say is amazing. And from there, you just need to take relentless action because with competence and ability to do things comes confidence. You need to earn the right to be confident. Question 27. What's something that makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up in a good way? and it can't be Morello scoring at Parkhead. Well, that's an obvious one gone. Alfie's back in form at the time of recording after two goals in Europa League, so that would be great. But the immediate answer that sprung to mind was actually the minute silence that happens at football matches, be it for remembrance or be it for a public figure or a public football figure that's died, the roar straight afterwards when the whistle goes to signal the end of the silence is, oh, goodness me, it hits you, doesn't it? You can't like miss the fact that it's come. So the hairs on your back of your neck certainly stand up at that point. Our final question is question 28, and that is a nice one to wrap up on, which is your biggest podcast highlights before going into triple figures. Episode 100 out next week, and I'm so excited to hit that milestone. But highlights wise, the initial answer that came to my mind was that interviewing people that I look up to a lot or have learned a lot from when I was younger felt great. The fact that I was able to hold my own in these conversations and contribute towards them and bring the best out of that guest, in my opinion, and the feedback of the audience as well. Two of those guests would be Chris Williamson more recently, in terms of somebody that I've learned a lot from, and then Joe Delaney, who I learned a lot from when I was quite a young guy. And they were big influences of mine. And so to hold my own in those conversations and have impactful conversations that the audience enjoyed and that I enjoyed personally was something I'm quite proud of. I'm also very pleased from a highlights perspective, the array of really helpful and actionable financial information that's appeared in the podcast. It's not advice, but it's information and insight on investing, on crypto, on Forex, and even my own personal approach in terms of what I do in this space, because it's not something that's taught in schools. It's not something that many people are particularly fluent in. So being able to contribute in that space and support people through that is definitely a highlight. Beyond those highlights, the last big highlight I'll call out would be the relentless consistency of it. I shared on Instagram the stats. The vast majority of podcasts that are released never make it above 10 episodes. Beyond that, I think it's 28 is the next cutoff. So to do 4x that and head up towards 100 and be going beyond that is amazing. I've not missed a single Sunday since the 1st of April 2020. And I've even had, I think, 15 other releases on a Wednesday to support that. So that's been an added bonus. And that makes me proud. That makes me feel fulfilled that I've really turned up and delivered consistent quality content for people that choose to support me and listen to me. So thank you very much if that's you. And thank you for enabling me to have these highlights, because I wouldn't be able to get high quality guests if nobody was listening. I, at all times, try and detach myself from the metrics, but quite simply, you cannot get Don McGregor, you cannot get Neil Smedley, you cannot get Celeste Headley without an audience listening and tuning in and supporting it and sharing it with their friends and growing, because these guys will not spend their time in a podcast if there's five people listening to it. It needs to be hundreds, it needs to be thousands, and that is something that you guys are enabling to happen. So thank you very, very much for doing that. With that in mind, I'm excited for you to all hear episode 100 next week, which is a bit of a special, a round table event with Chris and David. And I'm going to stop rambling now, because I've answered the 29 questions. I've really enjoyed the show, and I hope you have too. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.